In today's episode, we're diving into six true scary stories from people who came face to face with something they still can't explain. From a Ouija board prank that may have invited something into the bedroom, to an old house in Suffolk where unseen dogs ran through empty halls, we'll travel beneath Pasadena's infamous Colorado Street Bridge, down a lonely stretch of California highway, and into encounters involving strange lights, towering figures, and a man who seemed to know far more than he possibly should. Story number one. Don't mess with the Ouija board. A story posted by Mick Strange. Mick and their partner had always considered themselves skeptics. They enjoyed the subject of the paranormal, but only from a distance. Mick liked reading about cryptids, extraterrestrials, Bigfoot, and strange encounters. But it had always been from the perspective of folklore, fun and spooky YouTube videos to fall asleep to. Mick especially didn't believe in spirits or magic as most esoteric and religious belief systems described it. But one night made them rethink all of this. A friend was preparing to move away, so Mick decided to throw a themed murder mystery party. Mick had put a lot of work into it, writing the entire story, assembling the props, and building a chain of puzzles that would lead everyone from one clue to the next. For one of the puzzles, Mick had a brilliant idea. Mick ordered an ordinary Hasbro Ouija board online and bought several powerful magnets. Mick placed the magnets underneath certain letters and beneath the planchet so the pointer would move across the board and reveal the next clue. Pretty clever, right? A clever mechanical effect designed to make their friends think that the board was responding on its own. The party went well. Everyone loved the game. A few friends stayed the night, and by the next day, the house had returned to normal. The guests left, the props were put away, and Mick was back to everyday life without giving the Ouija board another thought. But that night, Mick went to bed beside their partner. Sometime after falling asleep, Mick woke up on his back, staring at the ceiling. And immediately, something felt wrong. Mick's body felt heavy, arms and legs sluggish, as if they were buried beneath an impossible weight. Mick tried to move. Nothing happened. Mick tried to move again. But still, Mick could not move. Mick had never experienced sleep paralysis before, but knew what it was. And even in that moment, while panic started building in Mick's chest, Mick's rational mind tried to take control. This is sleep paralysis. Mick's brain was awake, but the body had not caught up. Mick knew that auditory hallucinations could happen during an episode. Mick knew that people often reported seeing figures in the room, feeling pressure on their chest, or sensing something nearby. Mick knew that so-called sleep paralysis demons could explain a great deal of supernatural folklore. Mick understood all of it, but being able to explain it did not make it less terrifying. Lying frozen in the dark, Mick had one thought that could not be shaken. Please don't let me see a demon. And then, there were footsteps. They were beside the bed. And at first, the footsteps seemed distant, and then they came closer, and something would pace back and forth along the side of the room, toward the bed, away from the bed, closer, farther. The sound changed with every pass. It had a steady rhythm, like something walking on 2 feet, circling Mick while laying helpless and unable to move. Mick fought to stay calm. It's an auditory hallucination. It's part of the sleep paralysis. Part of the brain that was awake, while another part was still dreaming. It was rational. But then, the footsteps came close one final time. They stopped beside Mick's head before a sharp inhale could be heard. Right next to Mick's ear, a blow was felt. Not a vague sensation, not a draft from a vent or a shift in the blankets. It came from pursed lips. Mick felt the air strike their ear. The shock broke the paralysis instantly. Mick launched out of bed, across the mattress and onto their partner, who would immediately wake from their sleep, confused and startled, trying to understand why Mick had suddenly jolted awake in terror. And that's when Mick tried to calm him down. "It's okay," Mick said. "Go back to sleep. I'll tell you in the morning." But Mick barely slept after that. The next day, Mick told him what had happened. Mick described waking up frozen, the footsteps, the feeling that something had been pacing beside the bed, and the breath directly against the ear. The partner listened, and then almost exactly 1 day later, he had his own experience. His first episode of sleep paralysis. His own sense that something else was in the room. By the end of the week, Mick could no longer ignore the timing. Neither of them had ever experienced sleep paralysis before. Neither of them had a history of strange nighttime hallucinations. Yet both had their first episodes within a day of one another, after Mick had used a Ouija board as a game prop during the party. Do you think that Ouija board had something to do with this? Story number 2. A creepy story posted by Aromatic Baker 2681 on a Reddit thread titled, "For Those Who Believe in Ghosts, What Was the Exact Experience That Turned You from a Skeptic into a Believer?" When Melinda moved into the shared house in Suffolk around the year 2000, she had no reason to think that there was anything unusual about it. It was an old Georgian house, large, aging, and full of the quirks expected from a building that had stood for generations. And at first, the creaking floors, shifting pipes, and unfamiliar nighttime sounds were easy enough to dismiss. Old homes made noise, things settled, doors stuck, lights flickered. But before long, Melinda began noticing things that did not feel ordinary. She would be lying in bed when she heard sounds moving through the house. Not the occasional pop of timber or groan of plumbing, but distinct noises, scrabbling, rapid movement, the unmistakable sound of dogs running across the floors. The only problem with that was nobody in the house owned a dog. She would lie still, listening as the sounds moved from one part of the house to another. Paws, or something that sounded like paws, would race across empty rooms. Sometimes the noise seemed to come from directly outside her bedroom door, and other times it moved overhead or beneath her. And then there were the objects. Melinda would leave something in one place at night and find it somewhere entirely different the following morning. Small things appeared moved or rearranged. And then the lights would behave strangely. Her computer and printer seemed to fail constantly whenever she tried to use them in her bedroom, freezing, refusing to work, or behaving as though there were a connection problem. But whenever she would come out of that room, everything worked normally. There was no single dramatic apparition, no shadowy figure standing at the foot of her bed, no voice speaking her name in the dark. Instead, it was a slow accumulation of small, relentless disturbances that became harder to ignore. The bedding would be pulled while she was lying in bed. Not enough to throw her from the mattress, but enough for her to feel it. A tug, a pull, a sudden movement at the edges of the covers when there was no one else in the room. And the feeling in that bedroom was worse than any sound. It felt heavy. The room directly below it carried the same oppressive atmosphere. And most of the rest of the house seemed mostly normal. But those two rooms felt different. Melinda often felt watched there. She could not see anyone, but she rarely felt alone. And as the activity increased, she began avoiding the bedroom whenever she could. If she had to stay in the house alone, she'd sometimes slept on the sofa instead. But on other nights, she left the lights on, unable to settle in the dark. And by the time she finally moved out, something was happening nearly every night. She wanted distance from the place more than answers. A year later, she was at a barbecue when she ran into the man who had moved into the house after her. They all knew one another, casually through a local pub, and the conversation eventually turned to the old Georgian property. He began describing what had happened to him, unprompted. He told Melinda about the noises at night, the things he heard moving through the house, the unsettling atmosphere in the bedroom, and Christmas Eve, when he had been completely alone because everyone else had gone away, which had apparently been especially bad. And as he spoke, Melinda began mentioning the things that she had experienced. The room, the heaviness, the sounds, the bedding, the feeling of being watched. The man had went pale. His experiences had been worse. He claimed one night while in bed, something had slapped him across the face. And on another occasion, he had heard a bowl of coins sitting on his dresser begin to move, as though an unseen hand were loudly stirring the coins around inside of it. The more they talked, the clearer it became that they were not describing two unrelated experiences. They had lived in the same room at different times and had both felt the same thing. Years later, Melinda looked into the property again and learned that it had been sold and heavily renovated. She often wondered whether the renovation changed anything. Maybe the work disrupted whatever had made those rooms feel so oppressive. Maybe it erased the atmosphere entirely. Or maybe there could be something still there, hoping to never be forgotten. Story number 3. Colorado Street Bridge Horror Story from Pasadena, California, based on a post made by an anonymous user. Julio found himself bored and restless one night. It was late, around 11 p.m., and he decided to go for a late-night walk near Pasadena's Colorado Street Bridge. He wasn't looking for ghosts. He wasn't trying to investigate the bridge's dark reputation. He simply wanted to just get out of the house. Julio would park his car and begin walking, eventually making his way toward the area beneath the bridge. The enormous concrete arches rose above him, cutting across the Arroyo Seco. He walked until he was almost under the bridge until he realized that he left his phone in the car. So he decided to just have one quick cigarette before going back. And when he got back to his car, something was strange. The clock on the dashboard read 3 a.m. His phone said the same thing. Julio stared at both screens, trying to understand how that could even be possible. He had arrived around 11 o'clock. He had taken a brief walk, smoked one cigarette, and returned to his car. Something that took no more than 30 minutes, yet nearly 4 hours had passed. The missing time was disturbing enough, but then Julio realized something worse. He could not clearly remember where he lived. For a moment, his mind went blank. The route home, normally automatic and familiar, felt completely inaccessible. He sat in the driver's seat, trying to ground himself, reminding himself who he was, where he lived, and what he was supposed to be doing. He had never felt so disoriented. Eventually, Julio pulled away from the bridge, but he had to stop again and take a breather before attempting to drive home. He never found an explanation for what happened that night, and a few years later, Julio was telling a friend about the strange experience. His friend listened, and then gave him the kind of answer that Julio had not expected. "Let's go there now." The bridge was only about 15 minutes away from Julio's home at the time. It was summer, bright and hot, and they went during the middle of the day. They made their way beneath the Colorado Street Bridge, walking through the open areas of the arroyo. And that's when Julio felt it again. A cold spot. It felt like opening the door of a 7-Eleven or standing in front of the refrigerated wall at a liquor store. The strange part was where it was located. The spot was around 15 to 20 yards from beneath the bridge, in an area exposed to direct sunlight. There was no canopy over it, no deep shade, no apparent reason for the temperature to drop so dramatically in this particular part of the area. Julio could stand only a few feet away and still feel the full summer heat on his skin. But if he stepped into this one small area, the temperature would change. Nothing about it made sense. Colorado Street Bridge was completed in 1913 and rises roughly 100 feet above the Arroyo Seco. It developed a tragic history of deaths dating back to 1919, particularly during the Great Depression, and has long carried a reputation for hauntings and local lore. In response to that history, the bridge has undergone renovations and has installed barriers to deter people from ending their own lives. Julio did not claim to know what happened during those missing hours. He did not claim the cold spot was paranormal. He still does not consider himself someone who fully believed in ghosts. But the bridge had given him two experiences that he could not easily explain. One night when hours seemed to disappear and his sense of self briefly slipped away, and one bright summer day when he stepped into a patch of freezing air beneath the blazing California sun. You guys know I love telling scary stories, but did you know I also like to cook? Now when I cook, I'm always looking for high quality meats, and given that I do a lot of online ordering, selecting any sort of meat is always like a gamble. Am I going to get something fresh, or will it be the old meat that's almost off the shelf? Because of that, I'm anxious to order any sort of meat online, and I often have to visit the store in person to pick the quality meat that I want. But what if I told you there's a different solution to all of this? Now, as you may know, I love scrolling Reddit, and I came across this company many people kept posting about named Omaha Steaks, a company that's been around for over 100 years with the same quality meat that you can get at the highest rated restaurants around. Whether it's ribeyes for a special date night with a horror movie, hamburgers for a campfire with some scary stories, or a juicy sausage that you can cut up into tiny pieces in the kitchen, Omaha Steaks has it all. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging, and is shipped nationwide, arriving frozen and ready to grill, sear, and roast with minimal effort and time. And did you know that they have this really cool offering called the Burger Perfection Flight? For just $79.99, you can get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of steak, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. I can't wait to try this flight. I already have my order in, and it's going to be here in no time, and I'll let you guys know just how good it is. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Story number 4. A scary story from Pacheco Pass in Santa Clara County, California. Posted by Espacito Mike 206. It was early in the morning when Mike was driving east along Highway 152 through Pacheco Pass. The road between Casa de Fruta and Bell Station was still quiet at that hour. The sun had not fully taken hold of the landscape yet, and the hills around the highway were washed in that strange, colorless light that comes just before morning fully arrives. Mike was on his way towards San Luis Reservoir. He had driven that route before. It was a familiar countryside. Long stretches of highway, open hills, scattered trees, and the occasional vehicle passing in the opposite direction. There was nothing unusual about the trip, until he saw something standing on the side of the road. At first, Mike thought his eyes were playing tricks on him. The figure was small, only about 4 feet tall, and completely still. It stood near the shoulder of the highway, close enough for Mike to see it clearly as he approached. It wore all black. Not ordinary clothes, not a sweatshirt or jacket that could easily be explained away in the dim morning. The dark fabric hung from its body in a way that reminded Mike of a monk's robe. And if it wasn't that, it was its legs that made Mike's stomach turn. Beneath the black garment were two impossibly thin white legs. Mike stared as he passed. The thing did not wave, it did not react, it did not step away from the road or turn its head to watch Mike go by. It simply just stood there, still, silent, watching. Mike kept driving, but the image stayed with him. And later, Mike would ask one of the park rangers near San Luis Reservoir whether they had ever seen anything like it. Maybe there was a person living near the road. Maybe it was someone in costume, a confused pedestrian, or a local story that he had not heard before. But the ranger's response was immediate. He did not laugh. He did not ask Mike to describe it again. Instead, he looked directly in his eyes and said, "Mike, stay away from it." And Mike would never drive down that road again. Story number 5. A terrifying encounter with an alien. Commented on my Facebook page by an anonymous user. A few weeks before the encounter at her house, Jane and her friends had seen something in the sky that none of them could explain. They had been outside when they noticed 3 circular lights moving overhead. The lights formed a triangle. At first, they watched from a distance, trying to make sense of what they were seeing. The formation did not look like a single aircraft. It appeared to be 3 separate glowing orbs holding a precise triangle shape as they crossed the sky. And then the lights began descending. They seemed to go down near the base of a mountain not far from where Jane lived. And that's when curiosity quickly took over. Jane and her friends got into the car and tried to reach the area where the lights appeared to have landed. But the closer they got, the more inaccessible the location became. There were no roads leading directly toward the mountain base. No trail they could follow, no clear path into the dark terrain. They could only get so close. From roughly a mile away, they saw something else. The 3 circular lights were gone. In their place were 2 intensely bright pyramid-shaped lights hovering above the tree line near a wash. They appeared to hang in the air about 50 feet above the trees, perfectly visible despite the distance. The glow was powerful. The objects were so intensely illuminated that the mountain itself seemed to disappear inside the light. They watched for as long as they could, but there was no way to get closer, no way to see what the lights actually were, and eventually, they left without answers. A couple of weeks passed, and one night, Jane was spending time with her friends in her backyard. Everything seemed normal at first. They were talking outside, enjoying the evening, when Jane noticed movement near the top of one of the young palm trees by the back wall. The palm was more than 7 feet tall, and at first, she thought that it might be a bird, a cat, or some animal moving through the fronds. But the movement stopped, and Jane looked closer. And that's when she saw it. A head, eyes. Something was perched high in the palm tree, looking down at them. Jane pointed it out to her friends, and for a moment, they all stared. And then whatever was in the tree seemed to realize that it had been seen, and it took off running. And Jane and her friends panicked. They ran inside the house, locking the door behind them and retreating to Jane's bedroom. They tried to calm down, telling themselves that it had to be an animal or someone playing a cruel joke. And about 15 minutes later, there was a tapping sound against Jane's bedroom window, and everyone went still. And Jane cautiously moved towards the blinds and looked outside. And there was nothing. The backyard appeared empty. No figure near the window. No movement by the wall. No sign of whoever or whatever had been in the palm tree. And just as she was about to close the blinds, she noticed movement in the upper right corner of the window. Something was above her. It leaned down slowly and looked directly at her. Jane saw a face that she could only describe as a classic gray alien. Large, dark eyes, an unnatural shape, and features that did not look human. But this figure was not small. It had to have been 8 or 9 feet tall. The being stood high enough to look down into her window from above, its face appearing at the upper edge of the glass as it stared directly at her. Jane froze, and then fear took over. She slammed the blinds shut. Her friends were equally terrified, and after seeing what appeared at the window, none of them wanted to leave the safety of the house. Story number 6. The Strange Encounter at the Car Dealership. A story posted by an anonymous user on the paranormal subreddit. Around 2004 or 2005, Ray and his girlfriend Maya were driving around town with no real plan for the night. In the spur of the moment, they decided to stop at a local Honda dealership. Ray wanted to look at motorcycles, and they pulled into the lot, walked inside, and immediately noticed that something was happening near the sales floor. A short, older African-American man was standing with one of the salesmen, who he seemed to be in the middle of an argument with. The salesman was clearly trying to get the guy to leave. But when Ray and Maya walked through the door, within seconds, the older man turned around. The man looked directly at Ray, and everything else seemed to disappear. The salesman kept trying to speak to him, but the man acted as if he did not exist. He ignored the salesman completely and walked straight toward Ray and Maya, and he introduced himself as Ramses. He then said Ray's name, and then he said Maya's name, and at that point, Ray froze. There was no reasonable explanation for it. This was years before social media profiles made personal details easy to find. Ray and Maya had not told anyone that they were going to the dealership. They had not planned the visit. They had simply driven there on impulse. Yet this random guy named Ramses knew who they were. And he even knew more than that. He began talking about Ray's grandfather, not just mentioning him vaguely, but speaking about his past, his time in the war, and aspects of his history that made Ray wonder whether this stranger had known him personally. Ramses did not offer a long explanation. He did not try to sell anything. He did not ask for money or tell a dramatic story. He seemed to just have one purpose, and that was to meet Ray. The older man shook Ray's hand again, and then he left. And that was it. But Ray could not forget the man's eyes. Ramses looked older, but had eyes that did not match the rest of him. They looked young, far younger than they should have. Ray had the feeling that he was looking at someone who did not quite fit the age, place, or the moment he was standing in. And the encounter left both Ray and Maya shaken. Ramses had known Ray. He had known Maya. And he had known Ray's grandfather. Ray could imagine the possibility that Ramses may have somehow have known his grandfather, although he doubted it. But even if that were true, it did not explain Maya. Ray's grandfather had never met Maya before. He had no idea she existed. He had been distant from that side of the family for years. There was no obvious connection between his grandfather, Maya, and an older stranger waiting inside a Honda dealership. And for nearly two decades, Ray replayed that meeting in his mind. Who had Ramses been? A person with information that he should not have had? A stranger who had somehow been watching Ray's life? A psychic, a medium, or someone connected to Ray's grandfather in a way that Ray never discovered? Or something else entirely? Ray considered possibilities that he knew sounded impossible. Maybe the man had been an angel. Maybe he had been some sort of time traveler. Or maybe, just maybe, he had been a messenger. Someone who appeared briefly, knew exactly who Ray was, and left once he had accomplished whatever reason had brought him there.